You are now listening to CJSF 90.1 FM, broadcasting from Simon Fraser University in Burnaby, British Columbia. We strive to provide perspectives that are rarely expressed in mainstream media. If you'd like to know more about us, check out our website at cjsf.ca.
New Dimensions is brought to you by Friends of New Dimensions membership support and by Larson Publications, publisher of the book An Open Life, Joseph Campbell in Conversation with Michael Toms. New Dimensions and our quarter-hour New Dimensions Cafe programs are now available worldwide as podcasts. You can find them at the iTunes Store and on many podcast sites and mobile apps. You can also find our podcasts and much more on our website, newdimensions.org. It is only through a change in human consciousness that the world will be transformed. The personal and the planetary are connected. As we expand our awareness of mind, body, psyche, and spirit, and bring that awareness actively into the world, so also will the world be changed. This is our quest as we explore new dimensions.
Our guest today, research scientist Dean Radin, says, based on a substantial body of experimental evidence, we can state with a high degree of confidence that real magic exists. Second, there are rising trends in science suggesting that what was once called magic is poised to evolve into a new scientific discipline, just as medieval astrology and alchemy evolved into today's astronomy and chemistry. Understanding how this enigmatic space works in a way that's consistent with the rest of science requires a new worldview, the lens through which we understand reality. This statement begs many questions, such as, is it possible to study magic using scientific principles and methods? What does the evidence tell us about the reality of magic? Are there any hints within today's science that tell us how magic works? Today, we'll be exploring these and many other questions with our guest, Dr. Dean Radin. Dean Radin is chief scientist at the Institute of Noetic Sciences, also known as IONS, an associate distinguished professor of integral and transpersonal psychology at the California Institute of Integral Studies. He's the author of many books, including The Unconscious Universe, Entangled Minds, Supernormal, and Real Magic, Ancient Wisdom, Modern Science, and a Guide to the Secret Power of the Universe. Join us for the next hour as we explore the science of real magic with our guest, Dr. Dean Radin. I'm Justine Willis-Toms. I'll be your host. Welcome to New Dimensions. Dean, welcome.
Thank you. Happy to be here.
It's good to have you here once more. Well, let me just start by saying you state that magic is real and it's a natural aspect of our reality. And as a scientist, it seems odd to be talking about this, whatever this phenomena is, in terms of magic.
Yeah, we've been trained by entertainment to imagine that magic can only be understood as fantasy. So for scientists to say that magic is real, I need to immediately then add, what do I mean by magic? So if you go through all of the esoteric literature, which talks about magic incessantly, it turns out that it falls into three categories. So one category is called divination. So we see that through tarot cards and rolling of dice and runes and so on. The second category is something I would call force of will, in which your intentions impress into the world and manifest things, shapes the world somehow. And the third category is theurgy, which is a word that roughly means God work. But the connotation is that somehow you can make God's work for you. And the traditional magical ceremonial context, it's evoking spirits and getting them to do things on your behalf. So that's what we mean by magic. So now let's take those ideas and cast them into terms of what we've actually studied in a scientific way. Divination is precognition or clairvoyance, which has been studied for at least 150 years by science. Force of will, we would call psychokinetic effects, mind-matter interaction effects. That also has been studied for a long time. And the third category of theurgy has been studied in the context of near-death experiences, of mediumship, and so on. So what I'm saying then, from a scientific perspective, we can look at what magic actually is, the practices of magic, and simply ask, well, what does science have to say about that? And when we do that, we find out that there's actually quite a bit that can be said.
Well, let's talk about some part of that. Let's go first with force of will. And I kind of associate a little bit of this with positive thinking or affirmations. And so are there any experiments that you've been doing about the efficacy of positive thinking and whether that really makes a difference in your lives or in the world? Or?
Well, there is, of course, a whole academic domain about positive psychology. And that's pretty well established that if you're optimistic and just from a psychological perspective, you're going to probably do better than if you're chronically pessimistic. But that's not what we're interested in here. We're interested in the direct interaction of intention into the world. And so the thing with positive thinking, with affirmations, is it's a combination of psychology and maybe something beyond psychology. It's both. So if you simply maintain a positive attitude, you're probably going to get along with other people in a better way. But that's not magic. The magic part comes in where you really, really wish for something to happen and it was unlikely to happen by itself, and yet it does. Then now you're starting to intrude into a realm where things that might just bubble along by themselves without deviating into an unusual direction, they in fact do deviate into those directions. And so we call those things synchronicities, or sometimes we'd say, it happened like magic. Well, we mean that it happened and was unexpected to occur. So that has been studied in the laboratory, but under very controlled conditions. We are interested in the anecdotes because that's what we apply in our own lives. But in order to know whether that's really what it appears to be, you have to go into the laboratory. And now we're talking about experiments where you have somebody's intention that is directed towards a physical system where you know how that physical system behaves very well. And you have essentially two conditions, one where people are intending something to happen and then they withdraw their intention. And typically you go back and forth and intend, withdraw. And now you look at the behavior of the physical system and you can measure to see whether it actually changes.
Does a laboratory change that, the setting change that?
It very dramatically changes the outcome. The most likely thing that happens is that it squashes the effect because you're asking somebody to do a miracle in the laboratory. You're also having a demand characteristic where you're asking somebody to do something right now. Do the miracle, not only a miracle, but a miracle on demand right now under the conditions in which I'm asking you to do them. That plus, rather than pushing world events around or events in somebody's life, you're trying to change something like an electronic circuit or a Geiger counter or other various, usually non-living systems.
So they won't have much of an emotional connection with it.
Right. So the challenge in any kind of laboratory experiment is to make it close enough to real world needs to make it interesting. But we can't always do that. Sometimes you have a very, very simple display like a squiggly line moving on a graph. That's it. Make the line go up. So these become very abstract and in simplistic experiments. But the advantage is that we also have very high control and knowledge about what is actually going on. Is the system behaving like it should or like it shouldn't, statistically? So when we look at those kinds of experiments, fortunately, the force of will is strong enough, even in these very austere conditions, that we do see things happening. That tells us that in principle, if somebody has a very strong motivation and need for an affirmation to occur in their life, we know that in principle, your intention can push the world around a little bit.
Now, when you do these experiments and you're choosing the subjects, the people who are going to be, you're choosing to do it, do you interview them ahead of time? Are they skeptical of this sort of phenomena, or are they believers? Do you kind of do a little pre-interview so that you put on the paper these people were very skeptical and these people were believers?
If we're doing an experiment that is dubbed a sheep-goat experiment, then yes. So the sheeps are the believers, or the sheep, and the goats are the not believers. And so many experiments have been done to separate people according to their prior belief, and then they do an experiment. And we know from many experiments that the results will split according to their belief. So the sheep will get positive results, sometimes significantly positive. The goats will either get no result at all, or more likely they'll get a significant negative result. They'll get a real result, but it's in the opposite direction from what the assigned direction.
Well, I would think that that's very significant in and of itself.
Sure.
There's a quote that you have in the book that I really love from Don Miguel Ruiz, and he says, "We only see what we want to see. We only hear what we want to hear. Our belief system is just like a mirror that only shows us what we believe." I've heard this in other ways with other people, and that just makes sense that when we're trying to talk to someone, let's say someone over a different political system than ourselves, and there's no way we can convince them of our point of view. And I think that some of that is present, that they can't believe whatever it is that we're saying because the mirror of it is just not getting it's not getting past that belief system mirror.
Right, but also consider that the filter, the belief filter, which allows you to see certain ways only, it also seems to be true, though, for intention, which is interesting, because if you think you cannot do something, like you can't do this psychokinetic task, the likelihood is that you're not going to be able to do it. Because some part of your mind is filtering out your whatever underlying motivation or intention is required in order to make it happen. So when you look into the literature, the magical literature, I'm talking about the esoteric literature here, it turns out that belief is one of the most important factors in whether or not a spell, meaning a force of will effect, is actually going to happen.
That's amazing. So the word for me that comes up for me in that is we must have confidence in ourselves, or we must train our children to have confidence in ourselves rather than just always putting them down, that there's some very, very positive benefit of training ourselves and training our children to have confidence.
Yes, but there's a dark side.
Oh, all right.
So the dark side is, as you've already mentioned, that if you very strongly believe in a certain political angle, that is all you can see and all you can know. The same is true in any kind of magical practice, that if you walk around in it with a pessimistic or cynical viewpoint on the way that the world works, you will shape it into that direction.
We'll talk more about that in just one moment. I want to remind our listeners that I'm here with Dr. Dean Radin, and he's the author of many books, including Real Magic, Ancient Wisdom, Modern Science, and A Guide to the Secret Power of the Universe. I'm Justine Willis-Toms. You're listening to New Dimensions. Thank you. I'm here with Dr. Dean Radin. He's the chief scientist at the Institute of Noetic Sciences, and he's the author of many books, including The Conscious Universe, Entangled Minds, Supernormal, and Real Magic, Ancient Wisdom, Modern Science, and a Guide to the Secret Power of the Universe. And if you want to know more about his work, you can go to his website, deanradin.org, deanradin.org. Or you can get there through the New Dimensions website, newdimensions.org. Dean, I'd like to go back to something that we were talking about earlier. You were talking about synchronicity. And you have a story, your own story about a synchronicity that I just found marvelous. This was years ago when you were looking for an office space. I'd love for you to share that story with our listeners.
So this is a multi-part synchronicity, each part of which could maybe be thought of as curious, as a classic synchronicity, but it's the compounding of several things in a row, which made it just mind-boggling. So this was early in 2000 when the dot-com craze was going crazy, and office space and cost was quite high. So we were looking for an office for a new nonprofit that we were building, and we finally found a place in Los Altos in a kind of a strip mall where there were real estate offices and dentists and that sort of thing. And we found an office space, a small one, but one that we could afford, so we got it. So in looking around at the other people in this office complex, we happened to notice that one of them was called PsiQuest, P-S-I, Quest, Incorporated. And we thought, well, that's a funny coincidence because we're doing psi research. P-S-I is a short name for psychic. So we're doing psi research, although our name didn't have psi in it at all. We specifically chose a name that nobody would know what it meant. It was called Boundary Institute. So we thought, well, somebody else is PsiQuest. But we figured it had to mean something like Personnel Services Incorporated or something like that, because we were very well aware of everybody in the world who was doing this. And we knew that there's nobody who's going to have a business doing psychic something, PsiQuest. So we kind of tossed it off as a good sign that we were in the right place. So I happened to live close enough to work to be able to walk. And about a month after we moved in, I took a different route to get to our office. And I noticed that right next door to us, which I hadn't noticed before, was PsiQuest Labs. So it was related in some way to this PsiQuest Incorporated, but this was a laboratory. And now I was thinking, well, how are they studying personnel services in a laboratory? It didn't make any sense. So every day after that, I peeked in the window and knocked on the door. I wanted to see, first of all, introduce ourselves since we were next door and to see what they were up to. But there was nobody there. So this went on for almost a month. Finally, I see that there's somebody moving inside and knock on the door. A man comes to the door. He opens the door, and I'm prepared to say, hello, I'm Dean Radin, and introduce myself. I actually start to say that, and his mouth dropped. I thought he was going to fall over. He was stunned. And it took a while for him to recover, and then I didn't know what to do. If I should call 911 or what? But it turns out that this was a man who was a former Apple employee. It was one of the developers of the original laptop, the Apple PowerBook. He cashed out from Apple and did what he always wanted to do, which was psychic. So PsiQuest Labs was his laboratory doing psi research, which already is shocking because we're next door and we're doing psi research. And we had never heard of this guy before. But then I wondered, well, why were you so shocked when he opened the door? Because he was trying to manifest me. And I said, what do you mean? And I was already starting to have my skin crawling thinking about this. He, as a private person creating a for-profit business on psi research, was in the process of raising money, building a board of directors, all that. He wanted to find me to be on his board of directors. But he didn't know where I was. In fact, at that point, hardly anybody, even my colleagues, didn't know that we were starting this new nonprofit. And almost no one knew that I was living in Silicon Valley. So he was doing a Tibetan practice where you stay up and sleep in 3-hour shifts for 24 hours, back and forth. And while you're awake, you have this very strong intention to manifest what you want. And then you go to sleep with the same idea, so you try to get it in a sleep state too. So he had 24 hours worth of repeatedly manifesting me or trying to get a sign that he was on the right track. So he was near the end of his 24-hour period. The door knocks. He opens it. And I'm standing there. So I think I have free will. You know, I just walked there that morning, opened the door, so I knocked it and so on. So I felt this was completely free will on my part, but maybe not, because he was essentially forcing this to happen through his own force of will and a certain practice. So that was synchronicity too. Third synchronicity is, besides freaking out everyone that upon hearing this, is when I was in my own office, which was next door to this place, what I had been doing for the previous month on a whiteboard was drawing the kind of laboratory equipment that I wanted. And so I had made this whole scheme of a certain kind of electrically shielded box and certain kinds of instruments and a leather chair that would recline inside the box and so on. So finally, this guy's name is John. He invites me in to see what's in the back room, the laboratory part. So I walk in there, and then all the color drains out of my face because I'm now looking at what I was drawing. I'm looking at a shielded room. It has the leather chair that reclines. It has all kind of the physiological equipment I'm interested in. And then the fourth synchronicity is it's on the other side of the wall from where I was drawing it on the whiteboard. So unbeknownst to me, while at least consciously, while drawing on this whiteboard, roughly 6 inches away on the other side of the wall was the very thing that I wanted to bring into existence. So he manifested me. And I manifested the thing that I wanted. So it was like a duel without either of us knowing in any normal way. We're both doing what amounts to a manifestation spell and pulling things into existence. Neither one of us knowing, having any idea where it's going to come from. But in a sense, when you do a magical spell, that's not the issue. The issue is you have an intention. You may place it in the future. And then the future somehow pulls you towards that. So we were discussing afterwards, and how in the world did this happen? Because there are no other psi research labs like this in the world, and yet we were right next to each other. And we decided that intention works in a way, or at least analogous to something like gravity. It's simply a force that pulls you towards it. And in this case, intention was acting like gravity, except we were two bodies. The two bodies get pulled together each other like a planet and a moon. You start orbiting each other until eventually, if you're lucky, the two will connect. So we connected. The gravitational pull of the intention just made it happen. So I've had other synchronicities as well, but nothing as dramatic as something like this.
Yeah, thank you for sharing that story in that detail, because it was extraordinary. As you say, so many different synchronicities coinciding at the same time. You just know that this isn't just some sort of random something or other. It at least appears to be much, much broader than that. And one of the things that you talk about there is that, in let's say, in his case, probably yours too, but for sure in his case, he had this strong intention, and then he followed it with practices. And part of the practice was to think about it and really be with it, and then to release it and just to let it go into a dream state. So can you say something about the way intention works in that way?
Yeah, both in magical practice and what we see in the laboratory suggests that you need to want something more than you've ever wanted anything ever. The motivation has to be completely off the scale. But then you also need to not want it. So it gives rise to this phrase of effortless striving. You must strive like crazy, but without any effort at all. So it creates a paradox from the get-go. We're not used to effortless driving, but it seems that something like that is necessary to have this work. Why, we don't know yet, but it's very interesting that you then see it said repeatedly within the magical lore. You must do everything you possibly can to push the intention and then release it. So in the laboratory, what you see generally is something that it's been labeled the release of effort effect. You try like crazy to make something happen, and then you finally give up, and that's the moment that you give up that the thing happens. So maybe,
is that the same as like letting go of outcome, letting sort of like not being attached to the outcome?
Yes, and so you may be right that the key there is the attachment. That if you really, really want something to happen, your ego is very heavily involved in it. It's grabbing onto the thing that you want. That seems to prevent it from actually manifesting. It's necessary to kind of form what it is that you want, but if you grasp it too hard, it doesn't allow it to move. So interestingly, there's a parallel in quantum mechanics, something called the quantum Zeno effect. So we know from quantum mechanics that observing elementary particles will change their behavior. So there's like step one, your observation makes a difference. But if you observe an elementary particle very, very quickly, it'll freeze it. It freezes its evolution in a quantum sense. Imagine that you may have an atom or something that likes to move in a certain way, vibrates in a certain way. Well, if you measure it once, you won't see this effect. You have to repeatedly measure it quickly. You will essentially stop it from moving. It cannot evolve anymore because you observed it, its behavior changed. You observe it again, its behavior changed. But the changing, you can force it to stop its evolution. So this is now talking about it from terms of fundamental physics, that there seems to be an analogy that occurs at the level of the everyday world from a magical perspective, that you must want it, you observe it repeatedly again and again and again, but nothing's going to happen. You're kind of freezing the system, and now you let it go, and it can go do what you wanted.
Ah. So you're saying that in physics, in quantum physics, there is an instance where you actually look at a small particle, and I'm just going to repeat this because this is just mind-boggling. So you see it really quickly a lot, and then you freeze it by just doing that. That observation freezes it.
Right. It's also another form of the quantum Zeno effect where you can accelerate its evolution. Both of them have to do with the speed with which you're observing. But in general, the first way that this was seen is the prediction that if you observe something at a quanta, the very small elementary particle level, the act of observing will cause it to stop evolving.
I'm here with Dr. Dean Radin. He's the author of Real Magic. I'm Justine Willis-Toms. You're listening to New Dimensions.
New Dimensions is brought to you by Friends of New Dimensions membership support and by Larson Publications, publisher of the book An Open Life, Joseph Campbell in Conversation with Michael Toms. New Dimensions and our quarter hour